is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu Ofor, and here's what's coming up.
He meets a group of guerrillas suspected of killing at least 30 people since 2019 as a way of challenging the peace agreement.
That was journalist Yannick Michel on the death of a Mozambique militant. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The Mozambique Police General Commander today confirmed the death of dissident guerrilla leader and former member of RENAMO, Mariamo Nhongo, in combat operations. Bernardino Rafael said Nhongo was killed around 7 a.m. today after intense fighting in the forests of Sofala province where he was hiding. Nhongo had been leading a militant faction of RENAMO, the National Resistance of Mozambique, that opposed the peace deal that RENAMO leader Osufo Momade and Mozambican President Felipe Nyusi signed in 2019 in an effort to end decades of internal fighting. Journalist Yannick Michel is in the Mozambique capital, Maputo, and he spoke with viewers Kate Pound Dawson shortly after the announcement was made. About 5 months after declaring an Ebola outbreak over in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, a new case has been identified. Already, health workers are mobilizing to identify contacts of the victim and to contain the virus. Reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti in the city of Goma spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson.
The case was confirmed last Friday, October 8th. It's a boy, a three-year boy, who was suffering in Butili in the Beni region. He went with his father to a health center to get examination, and the health center, so they sent samples in Goma, and Goma tested and found that it was Ebola. The boy died before the results.
So the boy has died then?
Yes.
Do they know where he caught the virus?
That's the problem till now. No one know where and how. But one thing we know, the region of Beni had an outbreak 2 years ago. So we don't know, maybe some samples still in some areas, because the boy is not the only one sick. There is some others, family members and neighbor, who show with the same symptoms and they are getting care.
What is being done to keep the virus from spreading widely?
The National Health Minister, Jean-Jacques Mugani, said that because we had a big outbreak last year in that region, there is a team ready to respond. And just now, a team were being supplied to list and follow 100 contacts of the boy and his father and do the decontamination of two health centers where the family visited. Several people in Beni has already been vaccinated against Ebola.
That was journalist Jafar Al-Katanti speaking with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson. In the previous outbreak in North Kivu province, 12 cases were found and 6 patients died. Hundreds of people were vaccinated against the virus, which causes a severe hemorrhagic fever. Between August 2018 and June 2020, North Kivu was the epicenter of the DRC's worst Ebola outbreak, in which nearly 2,300 people died. Also in the DRC, an update on a story we ran last week. 4 medical workers who were kidnapped while traveling in South Kivu province are now free. 3 worked for the Aid Group International Medical Corps, and the 4th was a nurse at a clinic in the area who managed to escape shortly after the kidnapping. There are a few details about how the IMC employees were free. A trial on the assassination of Burkina Faso's former president, Thomas Sankara, begins today, more than 3 decades after he and 13 others were killed in a 1987 coup. Former President Blaise Compaoré, the main defendant on the trial, who lives in exile in Ivory Coast, will not be present. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Aluna Traoré is the lone survivor of an attack that killed former Burkinabe President Thomas Sankara and 12 others in October 1987. Traoré was Sankara's legal advisor. We're standing at the spot where Sankara, still considered a national hero in Burkina Faso, died. On Monday, his alleged killers will stand trial at the military court in Ouagadougou. Traoré remembers the day of the assassination.
The tea qui nous intimait lors de sortie. Sortez, sortez, sortez.
He says the president got up, adjusted the tracksuit he was wearing, and told the other meeting attendees that he was the one the attackers were looking for. He went out the same door he came in. He walked out of the room with his hands up and headed outside, carrying no weapon. Sankara was a popular figure whose influence was felt across West Africa and beyond. Paul Melly is an analyst at Chatham House, a UK policy institute.
Came to be known by some people as the Che Guevara, if you like, of West Africa, with a big focus on grassroots issues. So really focusing on the well-being of ordinary people.
14 defendants stand accused of carrying out the assassination or conspiring to, including former top-ranking military officials and former politicians. The prime defendant, Sankara's successor as president, Blaise Compaoré, will not be in attendance, however. Compaoré was ousted in a coup in 2014 after 27 years of rule and has been in exile in Ivory Coast ever since. His lawyers denounced the trial as political last week. A previous trial for the Sankara assassination was held under Compaoré's rule, but that judgment was dismissed as politicised by the transitional government after Compaoré was ousted. Prosper Farama is one of the lawyers for the Sankara family. He expects the trial to last 4 months and says the Sankara family lawyers have amassed irrefutable evidence implicating the defendants.
There are a lot of witnesses who have been heard.
He says there are many witnesses who will be heard from the military, civilians, politicians of the time. For example, the driver who drove the commandos to the execution is alive and able to give clear testimony, according to Farama. Matri Mathieu Somme is representing one of the defendants, Gilbert Diendire.
Nous avons un contexte qui rend difficile le travail des juges.
He thinks the trial is being held in a context that makes the work of judges difficult, a context in which there are prejudices. He says people have already made up their minds about who carried out the assassination, which jeopardizes the presumption of innocence, the main principle of a fair trial, as far as he is concerned. Nonetheless, the trial has gripped the country. Traoré, as well as the families of those killed, hope to receive justice 34 years later. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Wagadougou, Burkina Faso.
Religious President K. Said, at the end of a visit to Cameroon, booking Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
General Ibrahim, commander of the Four Nation Multinational Joint Task Force Commission, or MNGTF, says the number of militants escaping from Boko Haram is increasing by the day.
I can tell you authoritatively from the beginning of August, about 3,000 Boko Haram members have surrendered. This is just within the multinational joint task force in Cameroon and in Nigeria.
He says it is suspected that an additional 600 militants who surrendered within the past 2 months to the joint task force are former Boko Haram fighters. Several thousand other defections were reported in May when infighting broke out among Boko Haram factions after Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau was declared dead. MNGTF, headquartered in Chad's capital N'Djamena, is made up of more than 10,000 troops from Niger, Cameroon, Chad, and Nigeria. Ibrahim says that since August, his forces have launched ceaseless raids on Boko Haram camps in the Sambisa forest and the Lake Chad basin, causing confusion among militants. The jihadists have not responded to claims that many militants are defecting. Boko Haram usually uses social media platforms to dismiss such claims. Ibrahim was in Yaoundé for a meeting of officials of the Lake Chad Basin Commission from Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria. The general and various officials say the weakening of Boko Haram has allowed thousands of displaced people to return to their homes. Mijiyawa Bakari is governor of Cameroon's far north region on the border with Nigeria. He says Cameroon is providing aid kits of blankets, mattresses, food and water to Nigerians who voluntarily returned home.
We have already accompanied more than 5,000 Nigerians who have gone back in the Borno State, and the head of state decided to hand to each refugee a kit to enable them, once in their land, to start their life.
In September, more than 1,200 former Boko Haram fighters and their family members who escaped from the jihadist group to Cameroon had returned to Chad and Nigeria. Mahmoud Fadil Makaye is governor of Lake Province, an administrative unit in Chad. Makaye says Chad's government is socially integrating militants and former fighters who are returning. He says his country is expecting foreign donors and funding agencies to provide financial and material support to develop localities destroyed by Boko Haram. He says since the death of Shekau, jihadist fighters have not had the courage to attack government troops. Makaye, however, said the remaining fighters of the jihadist group regularly attack villages for food. The defections from Boko Haram do not mean the jihadist threat is going away. Lake Chad Basin member states accused the Islamic State in West Africa Province, or the ISWAP, a Boko Haram splinter group, of infiltrating areas along the Cameroon-Nigeria and Chad border. Cameroon says ISWAP is trying to persuade civilians, especially youths, to join the jihadist group. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
A Franciscan nun from Colombia was freed Saturday, 4.5 years after she was kidnapped by Al-Qaeda-linked jihadists near Mali's border with Burkina Faso. Sister Gloria Cecilia Navarez met with Mali's interim president, Colonel Assimi Goïta. She thanked Malian authorities for her release and the people of Karangasso village in Mali for making it possible. The conditions of Navarez's release has not been revealed. Navarez was held in Islamic Maghreb by jihadists who had released a series of videos in which she appeared to be asking for help from the Vatican. The African Union says it has decided to turn its current mission in Somalia into a joint effort with the United Nations. In a statement, the Peace and Security Council of the African Union says it endorsed an AU independent assessment team's recommendation of a hybrid mission for Somalia. Approval by the UN Security Council is needed. The planned start date is in January. AU says this mission will, quote, ensure predictable and sustainable multi-year financing for the future mission through UN-assessed contributions, unquote. The Somali government previously rejected the plan and insisted on a supporting role for the AU mission with a gradual transition of security responsibilities to Somali forces. But the AU wants immediate consultations with the UN, the Somali government, and other stakeholders to work out transitioning. It also wants the number of troops contributing countries expanded. Currently, 5 countries, Ethiopia, Uganda, Burundi, Kenya, and Djibouti, provide the more than 19,000 military personnel operating in Somalia under the AU mission in Somalia known as AMISOM. In their assessment in May, the AU team recommended the hybrid mission comprises of a mix of police, 50%, military personnel, 35%, and civilians, 15%. Somalia is in the middle of a slow-moving election process, which could take months. In South Africa, the ruling African National Congress, or ANC, has been handed another hard blow ahead of local government elections scheduled for November 1st. A survey by one of the continent's leading research institutions, Afrobarometer, has shown that South Africans feel corruption has worsened under President Cyril Ramaphosa. He rose to power in late 2017, vowing to end the graft that was widespread under his predecessor, Jacob Zuma. Darren Taylor has more.
Ramaphosa has instituted several corruption inquiries since he became president, including an intensive investigation into the graft that flourished under Zuma. Zuma and his cohorts allegedly plundered state enterprises of billions of dollars, literally plunging South Africa into darkness as service delivery, such as electricity provision, collapsed. Ramaphosa has also given the green light to the prosecution of powerful former ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule on several charges of financial crimes. But despite these moves, top ANC members allegedly continue to perpetrate corruption. Some stand accused of stealing funds meant for medical equipment to fight COVID-19. Ramaphosa's health minister has resigned, accused of benefiting from a supposedly fraudulent tender related to COVID-19 communications campaigns.
49% of South Africans indicate that corruption has increased by a lot in the past year.
Afrobarometer researcher Preston Govansami says the survey he led asked for opinions on graft from almost 2,000 South Africans from different social strata.
15% comment that it's increased by somewhat. Clearly, about 64% of South Africans think that corruption is on the increase.
Worryingly for the ANC, most respondents say municipal officials, the vast majority of which are ruling party members, are the most corrupt, often demanding bribes to deliver basic services such as water connections. The ANC has dismissed the Afrobarometer survey as not credible and insists citizens will again vote for its candidates in a few weeks' time. Govansami says his poll shows otherwise.
Another question we asked is, how many of the following people do you think are involved in corruption? And there we gave a list of 10 institutions, most of which were government institutions. 53% said most or all of the president and his officials and his office are involved in corruption.
Work by several other independent organizations supports the findings of the Afrobarometer survey.
We see that Transparency International's most recent corruption perception index scored South Africa at 44 out of 100, suggesting that corruption is pretty high.
Afrobarometers also surveyed South Africans about their trust in government ahead of the municipal elections. Govansami says a quick look at the findings of his organization's projects since 2011 clearly shows citizens' waning faith in state promises to stop high-level corruption.
We see that in 2019, 49% of respondents said that the police or SAPS were corrupt. That has shifted to now 55% in 2021. Similarly, we see with local government officials from 45% in 2019 to 53% in 2021. And finally, with the president and the presidency, 38% in 2019 to 53% in 2021. So,
publicly, the ANC voices confidence ahead of the November 1st elections. Privately, ANC insiders tell VOA that party leadership fears widespread losses in key cities and towns across the country, further loosening the hold it's had on South Africa since 1994. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Using feature phones and homemade wooden tablets brings a new meaning to e-learning and perhaps bringing the digital divide that affects most rural Malawi. Thanks to the genius of Sam Maskini, an app developer who has designed an offline mobile learning app, Inspire, quote, to make e-learning more accessible for schools in remote villages. Africa's 54 technology correspondent Paul Dio via Skype spoke to Sam Maskini, technical lead, Inspire Learn team in Lilongwe, Malawi.
A lot of your friends, a lot of people talk about you as somebody who is on the verge of becoming the next Bill Gates in Malawi. You've literally come up with your own way of helping young people. You are doing some amazing things on the ground. Let's start there.
Thank you so much. Well, I mean, it's quite humbling to hear those remarks. Main specifically, my main inspiration is trying to help fellow youth in some of the most pressing challenges that we face on a national level. So my background can also serve as a big testimony because I actually come from a humble background. So due to so much circumstances to the state of education in Malawi, there's quite a small number that is privileged to attend schools or get access to quality education. So we've had two technologies that we're currently also working on. When I say we, I simply mean me and my small team. And we are working on providing access to, you know, reading resources, learning resources on feature phones. So these are basic mobile phones. So students get to access content that is rich in media. You have images, you have video clips, you have text there and audios. So we are doing this at the cost of no internet at all. So you find out that even students in rural areas of the nation are able to be included in such an initiative.
You said earlier that you use feature phones to do what you do. How about the cost of those phones? How are they able to afford some of those phones? They might not be as expensive as smartphones, but they're still expensive for ordinary people.
That's very true. I mean, the main reason why we selected to start with feature phones because they're widely available to most of the local Malawians. But then you find out that there'll still be a certain group of people that cannot fit in the margin that you were projecting. So for such particular people, we have another different device that we think might be of use. We have making tablet computers that can be used by three or four people at a time, so that they do not get the burden of having each one, you know, getting the cost of trying to make use of that same thing.
Did I hear you correctly? You said that you are making tablets?
We are making tablet computers. So we're basically using IoT. I don't know if this is too technical, but it's basically us assembling a few parts, and then forming up something and then properly packaging it with some content. So we started with making them out of wood. We are now moving to trying to recycle plastic and make them out of plastic. And one of the best features about them is they are solar powered. So you'd find about three or four being powered with one small sized panel. So this one is to actually address to a bit of a larger number of students rather than having one basic home. We'd have a digital literacy lab in a village that does not have a facility to safely secure desktop computers or even the capacity to power and sustain themselves or in a digital literacy program that they may be having.
Speaking about those tablets, do you program them in your local languages or it's all like one size fits all, English?
Our main goal is to actually encompass or actually also embrace our own heritage itself. So for us, we actually saw it, you know, best fitting to include that aspect of our local languages in some of the programs. But you see, most of that is falling to the part where we have to work with teachers to produce the content, the learning materials together. So on our end, customizing on the software systems wouldn't be much of a problem. But then it's about the content that we have to include in the package itself that we have to constantly work. So I would say yes, we are working with our local languages for the most part.
That was Africa's 54th tech correspondent Paul Ndio speaking to Sam Maskini in Lilongwe, Malawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Junior Ofo in Washington. For all listeners' developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, afrobeat and dombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.